You are Locked On Pacers.
Pacers fans, it is time to start our player season recap series. And we were going to start with Victor Oladipo today. But Adam and his final studying or whatever the heck important thing he's doing could not make it today. So we're going to start with Domantas Sabonis instead. As always, I am one of your hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Tony East. And with me on the other line is another writer at 8.9 seconds, Jonathan Mathies. Johnny, how are you doing right now?
You know what? I'm doing quite all right, Tony. I'm ready to talk some Domas.
I'm ready to talk some Domas, too. But first, because everyone's going to ask me about it, we should talk about our reactions to Paul George having knee surgery and being out for 6 to 8 weeks, Johnny, which you haven't even seen yet.
No, what?
Just announced by the Thunder that Paul George underwent arthroscopic procedure in his left knee and will be sidelined for 6 to 8 weeks.
That's exciting.
That's not exciting. That's sad.
I mean, it's exciting in a way like, oh, I thought this really big box was going to have a bicycle in it, but it doesn't. It has a plunger. Like, it's that type of exciting.
I told Johnny before the show that we are going to do some breaking news at the start, so he's not as excited as me.
Well, what's it going to do is, it can't really hurt his contract.
Rip? Yeah, no, it nothing changes. It's just something. More like playoff knee, am I right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, I see what you did there. I approve.
That's all I have there, but it's a good segue. It worked out perfectly because the Paul George trade are the two people we're doing this week for the player recaps. Recaps, yeah, sure. Kneecaps. All right, rip puns. Let's start talking about Domantas Sabonis, who pretty much destroyed all of my expectations this season, and I would guess that's the same for you as well.
He did. He exceeded. I thought he was going to be, I thought he'd be good. I didn't think he was going to look like a franchise cornerstone piece, you know, like I wrote on the night of the trade, this guy could be pretty like a good role player. And I thought he was going to be more cut from Miles Turner, like a, where's he from? He's from Lithuania, right?
Yes.
Be like a Lithuanian Miles Turner. And he looks a lot more polished than that, or at least he's got a really just solid skill set. And I was very pleasantly surprised that he was as far along as he is.
Do you remember early in the season when the Pacers were 3-3, and then the Pacers 3 wins, Sabonis was like 23 for 23, and then their 3 losses, he was like 2 of something crazy.
Yeah, that was funny because it was like, and also on top of that, Turner had just his awesome domination of game one of this season, and you're like, oh yeah, he's gonna be the next name your center. He's gonna be like Hakeem and Wilt and Russell all combined into one. And then he got concussed and then he disappeared. And we're like, oh, I guess we're gonna have to try this Sabonis guy. Oh, hey, he's pretty good. And so and then he just kept getting better as the year went on.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, you can kind of call it fluky when you hit all your shots in two separate wins. I guess fluky. I don't even know if you can call it that. But I think it was the Kings they played. When he dropped 22 and was 9 of 9, I was like, okay, this guy's a pretty good basketball player. And you kind of could see then, you know, that he had some pick and roll stuff going on that, you know, he's only been on the team for whatever, like 2 months at that point. And I was like, wow, this guy, you know, this guy's already the best pick and roll player the Pacers have had in a decade.
And maybe and arguably he's one of the best, he's the best passer arguably on the team. And one of the best passers the Pacers have had in quite a long time, too. So it's like he does all these things that you just didn't think were possible, at least nowadays.
Yeah, well, and passing out of the pick and roll, especially because I feel like I've talked about this with Adam on the show before. It's like he catches the ball rolling down the lane, and he immediately knows if the guy in either corner is going to be open. Like he doesn't even look up. He just catches and turns and throws it, and it creates stuff. And you know, that's a skill for big men for sure, but he, like, has taken it to another level where I feel like I think the analogy I've made before is, like, in baseball, your coach when you were in Little League would always tell you, like, know where you're going to go with the ball before you get it. yes. I feel like Sabonis has that skill on the pick and roll. Well, really all the time, but especially on the pick and roll.
Yeah, he's not the like, 7-year-old outfielder who catches a fly ball and just, like, drops it and runs in. I remember Milton Bradley did this for the Cubs one time. He caught a fly ball and then turned around and lobbed it into the bleachers at Wrigley all lackadaisically and happily. But there was that was just the second out, and the guy scored on the play. I was like, oh. So he's not Milton Bradley, which is a positive.
Speaking of hilarious baseball outs, did you see the Mets got an out today for batting out of order?
No, I did not. That's very Mets of them. I mean, they're good.
They apparently submitted the lineup card to the umps wrong, or they just forgot that they did it. And I guess, I don't know. Jay Bruce got credited with the out, but I think Wilmer Defoe was supposed to bat, and Asdrubal Cabrera hit a double, and then they called him out, and that was the end of the inning.
That's classic. There's been a lot of interesting just baseball stuff. I know we're not did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're still there. Sorry. Someone else called on my phone. It was weird. Anywho. But there's like Gabe Kapler. He called in a guy from the bullpen to warm up in like the third game of the year, and the guy hadn't even taken off his jacket yet. So it's just there's been a bunch of fun stuff like that about baseball.
I wanna see if Locked On Phillies has a host yet. I don't know if I could talk about baseball every day, but I do like baseball a lot.
You should. Yeah, you should. If there isn't, you just start one.
Start it up. Get it going. To any of the possible overlap Pacers Phillies people out there, hello, I am with you.
It's a niche group.
It is a very niche group.
Proud. It's a few and proud group.
We won the World Series in 2008. We've been terrible ever since. It's awesome. But yeah, I agree with you about the passing of Sabonis. He doubled his assists from year one to two, which I mean, it went from one to two. But that's a microcosm of what he does moving the ball when he catches it in the paint. And the screens go along with it because he creates the space for himself almost when he sets these screens and gets the guards free. You know, people have to scramble to get to him. And he gets his elbows wide like the Gortat style screens. And it's just those little pick and roll things that make him so effective and why I like him so much going forward.
I agree on that point. I think also this was kind of a microcosm in game five in against Cleveland when they basically went to Domas down the stretch. Like he had the chance to win the game more or less. He also tied the game, but it's like they run the pick and roll with him and Victor, and then he has the ball and he has the ability, not just the wherewithal, but the ability to drive and do stuff with it. Like, I think that's underrated in the NBA. Like, there are people that they can set screens and then you throw them the ball and then they're just completely discombobulated. But Domas, you can see where the growth potential is there, not only just as the shooting, but he seems like he's almost got the full, he's not a shot blocker, but besides that, he's got everything you'd want.
Well, we'll get to defense momentarily, but I feel like this is also a weakness point to talk about. This is a lot of youth, I'm going to say mostly, but he also led the team in turnover percentage. And I think a lot of that is, you know, like I just said, youth, you know, he does know where these guys are going to be, but you know, if they cut ever so slightly right before he throws the pass, it goes out of bounds. And he has kind of weaker hands sometimes on the catch. And there's just a few little things he can clean up that would make him substantially more effective. But I think a high turnover percentage, given his, you know, I think third on the team usage, that might be wrong. Yes, third on the team usage, and one of the two guys ahead of him is Al Jefferson, so really second on the team usage.
Classic, you know, think, Big Al. Yeah.
Big Al stats are just hilarious given the amount of time he plays. I think there's just, you know, that's just going to – that number's just going to drop as he progresses, but it is something to monitor for him if you ask me.
I think you're right. I think he just has to play through contact too.
Yes.
There's the times when not just – live ball, like in the mid-court turnovers, but you can throw it down low and he'll get it like poked away. And part of it is he doesn't get the love from the officials all that often, which is happens. But that's the just consistency of finishing at the rim. And I think there's two shots he has that he's got improving. I got a really bad analogy for it, but there's his corner threes, because I think, I'm not sure, this might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure certain that the defenses gave him 400 meters of space when he'd be in the corner and where the defense was. But he's got to hit that. And he kept leaving it short. And then his hook shot in the lane, like instead of having to just barrel through the basket, he would try that hook shot towards the end of the year and he would still leave that short. But and that's just a level for improvement. But it reminded me of, and here's the bad analogy, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but when in Roy Hibbert's first couple of years with the Pacers, he was trying to work on his well, offense, but he was trying to work on a little hook shot. And by the year 4 and 5, he had it and he made 2 All-Star teams. But it just took repetition and patience with it. And if he's able to do both of those, he'll be able to stretch the floor a little bit and still have all the passing and hopefully get out of the way of some of those turnovers.
Yeah, and he hit a lot of the corner threes because he was given the space, but he didn't take as much either, which is a thing, you know. And I'm going to expand on the hook shot thing a little too. You know, he does take those a lot, and I wish he would just fake them and then dip under and then go up with his right hand. And that was an intentional segue to say I think his biggest weakness on offense is that he literally cannot shoot with his other hand.
Yeah, I don't know if there's not much to add there. I can throw a different story in, and this is a little this not non sequitur, if you want.
Go ahead.
His dad was really, really good at everything, right?
Yes.
And I ran into his dad after a game like this year, and I was walking to my car, and we parked in basically not the same spot, but more or less. We were walking, and I was like, "That's a really tall guy in front of me," but you're in the middle of a crowd, so not really thinking much about it. And then the crowd started to thin out a little bit. And he's still really, now he's still really tall. He's got that like Lego head that Arvydas Sabonis has, where it's just really square. And I was like, huh, wait a minute. I think that's his dad. So I called him. I called out his name. I was like, hey, Arvydas. And he turned around. So I'm standing like face to face with Arvydas Sabonis. And I said, Arvydas, I just want to say thanks. Thank you so much for like, we love your son here in Indianapolis playing for the Pacers. It's a great fit and happy he's here. And he told me, and this was fitting. It was on the game when Bojan threw the Celtics game away. It was that game. And Arvydas told me that he'd gone to 3 games and they'd lost them all. And I told him, well, maybe you shouldn't come back to these games then, in a fun way. But I don't know if he took my advice. But the Pacers did kind of take off a little bit after that. After they got the hangover going. But yeah, ran into Arvydas. So that's he's got a great model. There's connecting this back up. He's got a great model for just the versatile big man in his own family. Yes. That he learned from. And Arvydas could shoot with both hands. He could dribble, drive. And to say that Domas is playing like Arvydas would be selling very, 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 very high. But you can see little tiny glimmers where it's like, yeah, he is his father's son in certain aspects.
And Arvydas was probably the first stretch big man ever. Rick Smith was like revolutionary shooting mid-rangers, I feel like.
Yeah.
And Sabonis at the same time is taking threes and hitting them, you know, 3 seasons over league average this year even, which is pretty impressive back then. And he took 2 attempts a game in 97, which given I'd say Michael Jordan probably took 4 attempts per game back then. Like, that's crazy numbers.
Yeah, there's some of those players where it was like you look back at these great, awesome NBA players, and then you look at the 3-point shooting when they just brought the line in and they took like 2 shots. Exactly. Arvydas, his 2 threes were like leading the league for centers at the time.
Yeah, the best stretch 5 pretty much before 2000, and his season high and his best shooting year was 7 attempts in a game.
Yeah, and that's it's kind of a shame, just a shame that he came over so late. And that,
I mean, yeah,
you can thank the Soviets for that. But the stories when he would play Team USA in the Olympics, and even the Dream Team, like he played against the Dream Team, and they would just come out of after a game. Just David Robinson got worked by Arvydas, and they're like, what was that? Like, who's that guy? And he was just killing people.
You know what Arvydas wasn't great at?
What?
I'm forcing more segues on this podcast. Defending in space.
That is true.
You know what his son isn't good at? Defending in space. Yet. Hey. Yet. Yeah.
It's not his strongest. How many big men are great at defending in space?
Big men who are good at defending in space are worth a lot of money.
They really are. Like Anthony Davis is underpaid, right? Because he can defend
in space. Oh, for sure.
Or you have like Carl Anthony Towns who cannot defend in space.
Can't defend. Doesn't try at all.
That was the funny when Minnesota played Denver for the play-in game.
Yeah.
And you had Jokic who doesn't play defense and Towns who didn't play defense. And it was just a turnstile all game long. It was kind of hysterical in lack of defensive effort.
My eighth grade coach calls that Matador defense, where they like
that's hold up, true.
They hold up the curtain and just let them by.
That's totally true.
I
totally
need to write that. That's like a good writing term. I need to use this.
No one else take that. That's copywritten. You cannot use it. He's going to use it forever. You got to use it in like every if when you title the Tony East autobiography, you just call it Matador defense.
Matador defense. I will. But Sabonis isn't a matador. That we're just talking about bad defenders. And I really don't know if this is like the right way to frame this, but I feel like he almost got underrated as a defender because Turner just was better than him on defense. Like, I feel like it was like, oh, Sabonis isn't as good as Turner, so he's just like a guy. But he, you know, he does good reads in the pick and roll. He does it a little too late because he's young, and you know, he doesn't always get out on guys because he can't really defend in space, but he knows where to be. Like, cerebral players have that like Ben Simmons, you know, he's the same way. Like, they know what's happening in the game and they know where to be. They just figured out like a little bit too late at their age. Like, it'll be there for him eventually, I feel like.
Oh, absolutely. I think what he kept doing defensively, and I thought I was surprised. This is me using a really dumb, like, useless stat early on before the season. Was you looked at his when he got traded to the Pacers? I looked at his defensive rating, and then I looked at Turner's, and like, well, they're about the same. And they were, and I was surprised by that. And that's not the right way to use defensive rating, but that's a different point. But what I think's interesting is that the way he plays defense, it's fundamentally sound, I think, under the basket, but he doesn't have the highlight shot blocking. And so when he goes up to just like the old, again, Roy Hibbert reference, when he go up and do the verticality thing and try to stop someone charging, and they would just either like it just dump it off to the guy he just left to go to cover the guy driving the basket, then it just made him look worse because he's not going up there and just swatting the ball to the Raptors, you know. Like, if you're gonna be blocking shots, it just looks like you're a better defender than somebody who plays sound defense and gets beat because the guy behind him's open. But I don't have a way of like quantifying that right now, but that seemed like it happened all the time.
I kind of do.
Perfect.
I can try. He fouls a lot.
He does foul a lot.
That's probably his biggest demand. And that kind of relates to both things we said, just because when he's beat like that, I guess that's the best way to bail yourself out is to foul. But you know, you have to bail yourself out when you're beat. And he 3 fouls a game this year. I think his per 36 foul number is like ridiculous. Yeah, 4.4 fouls 4. per 30. Huh?
4 point. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of fouls. And, you know, fouling centers, like, you're getting probably a 65 to 70% free throw shooter. Like, you're giving up, you know, you're going up like 6 to 7 points a game on those plays. And it is what it is. And I think that, you know, everyone will he'll get better at things. He's been in the league for 2 years. He's been in the Pacers system 1 year. But, you know, the two things for him to work on, I think, will go hand in hand with defending in space and fouling, because he'll learn to stay with guys and keep his hands in the right places. And you know, when he gets good, he'll get more veteran callsy stuff. So I'm not super worried about any of his stuff yet, but we have to touch on his weaknesses because he does have some. He is a young guy.
Yeah, he's not perfect. And almost – this season, I know he played. What did he play? 80 games last year. You have to remind me. He played 81.
81.
City, and he started 66. But this season was almost like a. It wasn't really a sophomore year for him. It was like a different. It was almost like a new rookie year of being a real post player. Because Oklahoma City, they played him in a whole different. They played him completely differently. Like, they
played 16% of his minutes at center in OKC. That's it.
Yeah. Which of all the things that Oklahoma City has done over the last 5 years is kind of baffling. There's one, just another, not a big chapter like trading Harden away to Houston. But it's just another little page. You can just underline it a little bit where you have this guy who is a gift of hindsight, but you look at what he's able to do in the pick and roll, and obviously they have Steven Adams, but you're going to play him with Adams in Oklahoma City and then just play him completely out of position and want him to spot up when he could do this, when he's holding the ball and helping direct traffic. So it's this was almost a whole new. I guess my point is this was a rookie season for him at center.
More yes, yes. He made 51 threes his rookie year. He took 37 threes this year.
Really?
That's the biggest shift in his. Yeah, that's or not the biggest shift. That's the most crazy. Obvious. Yeah, it's the most obvious proof of the shift to me. Is that you know he was never really outside, and I'm gonna look at his percent of field goal attempts by distance. Yeah, so he took 33% of his shots from three his rookie year, only 5.6%. You know, he 47% around the rim this year versus 28 last year. Like he's really transformed where he was shooting, and that made him just so much more effective.
It did, it did. And he shot he this sometimes, I mean, it's a small sample size, but he shot 35% from three as opposed to 32 just last yep. year. I can
it's a thing. That. It's a thing, especially when his corner 3-point percentage went up so much.
Yes, yeah.
And here's a random stat that I like about Sabonis. Every single three he's made his entire career has been assisted.
Really? That's like Ryan Anderson.
He's only shooting on catch and shoots when he's open. You know, that's like even if he's only 35%, like I guess those are the ones you want him to take.
I think so. I would really not like him to do the J.R. Smith unassisted three.
No, like I don't think I want many guys
fade away.
I wonder who had this is such a random thing. Who do you think had the lowest percentage of three pointers made unassisted this year on the Pacers?
On the Pacers?
Yes.
Well,
obviously besides Vic. Vic was the lowest.
Okay. Well, that was gonna be my guess.
I guess the lowest two are pretty obvious.
Is it Collison?
No, he is third.
My other guess is going to be Lance.
It is Lance. 71.6%.
He also took more threes unassisted.
Yeah, he did. That's funny. Yes, he did. Damian Wilkins randomly pretty low percentage. I hope that is not a thing, even though he'll never play for the Pacers again. But we're off topic again. What do you have anything else you want to talk about with Sabonis? You know, I think your point you just made where this is like almost a rookie year for him just because he's playing a different position is huge and something to be mindful of going forward, just like he has so much more room for growth at the position.
Yeah, actually, and here's the point I'd like to make. I think it's interesting is how the amount of people that think Sabonis is better than Turner. Have you noticed that? Like, there's a lot. It seems like there's quite a few that when they look at Turner, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, he's underachieved, trade him. But the reason they're saying that is because Sabonis played so well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I am of the mind that there's a way that Sabonis has a better career than Turner. Like, obviously, Turner's better right now. Turner's better right now to me, but there is a way that Sabonis has a better career than Turner. And, you know, we'd be remiss not talking about their potential fit together because that would just solve all the problems. But, you know, there's a way that happens, and that's why I think you keep him around to see if that's something that you think he could exercise his potential. But if they can play together, it makes it all moot and makes them very dangerous when they have, you know, two guys as good as that. But when you look at it that way, you know, Sabonis is going to be the guy inside more often, and his post defense is worse than Turner. So that's his most obvious improvement to make that partnership happen.
That's true. It's almost like, I mean, they're opposites on each other of what you need from them. There are opposites, which is a benefit, but Turner's outside game is better than Sabonis's, right? Like, at least by the numbers and I think by appearances. But then you'd have to just invert them. But if you wanted to have them really work out, like you're going to be playing Turner at the four. And whenever I picture Sabonis trying to chase out on the perimeter, who was the Cav that he like murdered in game one? Was it
oh on the three, wasn't it? No, it was Kevin Love, wasn't it?
He came out, closed out hard. He closed out like a brick wall.
That was ugly.
Puppy, that was rough. And that's when I hear Kevin Pritchard talk about, we know we can really see him playing together. You can see it in theory, but that replay flies through my mind every time. And it's like, oh man.
Here's what I think is interesting. You know, everyone is like, man, I wish they were a combined player. That player exists. His name is Joel Embiid. So look at Joel Embiid. He is what you'd get if Turner and Sabonis were one player. But yeah, you know, I don't know who's going to have to improve on what for that to happen. But that is, I think, the next step for him to play with Turner would be huge. And the other, but if not, you know, the step is just continue to improve in the post and and exercise all his potential as a more conventional but still incredibly useful center.
Yeah. You know, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think the having the option of playing them together, just double back, but it is good. Just not like, don't do it every time. Like,
right.
Don't start them together, but they can overlap. That's fine.
Yes, I agree. We have Sixers Celtics in about 5 minutes, so I think we should roll to watch that.
Oh, we should.
That'll be a good one. In
who,
Brad
who do you,
Stevens.
Who do you think? This is, I know everyone who listens to this will be listening like after the game. Yes. But it seems the Celtics, they just have that thing, like that golden thing that just works.
His name is Brad.
He is made out of gold. He's a Zionsville Eagle. Like
Zionsville Eagle, right? Indeed. That's high school. Did they announce their starting lineup yet? It's something different, isn't it?
I haven't seen it. They because the Sixers did the change up for the last for game four. They started Redick with McConnell, and McConnell had a crazy game in game four.
Yes, he did. I'm trying to look it up because I knew they were starting something weird in this one. Horford, Baines, Jaylen Brown, Rozier, and then it goes to a picture. Come on. Oh, and Tatum. Okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. That's Jaylen Brown's first start in for Smart this time. Or not first start, but a different thing for him. That'll be interesting. TJ McConnell again. This will be a good one. I think the Celtics are going to win, but I don't know. It'll be good.
I think they will too. I'm a little moderately anti-Sixers, but I am. But it's more because of Stevens. This is me not talking objectively here. I just like Brad Stevens is awesome, and I hope the Celtics win because of that.
That's fair. I'm not rooting for anyone, but it'll be a good one. Johnny, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, Tony.
What are you writing about this week? Do you want to?
Yeah, so we're going to have, by the end of the week, there will be a season recap of Victor Oladipo. That'll be fun.
Yes.
Kind of like a little grading sheet of how he did, and I'm going to, spoiler, he grades out really well. Then I'm really excited. I've been working on the last couple of weeks, and we'll continue. It's going to be an off-season primer for 8.9 seconds. It's going to go free agent market, trades, everything.
Yes, and I think everyone's working on that, so be on the lookout for that. It'll be really cool. I'm doing some drafty stuff. Also, Luke Parrish coming back to 8.9. Mr. Scouting himself, so that's exciting news.
Excellent.
Excellent indeed. Thanks for listening, everybody. Adam will be on hopefully tomorrow to do this exact same thing for Victor Oladipo. And enjoy your Thursday.